Hey, good morning, Mike Causey. Welcome to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us today. And we're going to have a very interesting show. We're going to be talking about the Thrift Savings Plan. And then the item du jour, is the House going to vote to freeze federal pay for yet another year? And if so, how about what's happening after that? My first up guest is Tom Trabuca. He is Director of External Affairs for the Federal Thrift Investment Board. That's the TSP. Tom, are you with us?
Good morning, Mike. Yes, I am.
Hey, thank you for joining us. Got a batch of questions for you.
Oh, good.
And if I can launch into them, and then we'll talk a little bit about today's column, the millionaires among us.
Okay.
This guy says, and he tried to get us at a previous show. He's Tim, and he's retired in Alabama. And he called too late, but he said, as a retired Fed, I cannot find the answer to this. When I invested in the TSP, I was allowed to allocate which funds my biweekly investments went into. When I withdraw funds from the TSP, can I choose which funds they will be withdrawn from?
The short answer to that is no. But if you think about it, Tim, and other listeners who would be interested, there is a consistency in this answer. When you're putting money into the TSP, as Tim said, you allocate how those funds go in. If you want to change the investment mix of your TSP account, you execute what's called an interfund transfer. That's independent of how your contributions are going in. On the way out, the contributions come out pro rata. Now, what that does is say we're not going to affect your overall investment allocation with your withdrawal choice, that it will come out based on your overall allocation pro rata. If you've got 20, 20, 20 across the board, it comes out 20% from each of the five core funds. If you want to change that allocation, which I think is what Tim is getting to, he's thinking, I want to draw down, say, my from my C fund first, and then from my S fund, and eventually I want to end up with just the G fund because I want to get more conservative as I get closer to retirement. The way to do that would be through an interfund transfer, not through a withdrawal.
Would it another way to do it be to go into one of the life cycle funds?
Well, that's right. The life cycle fund would do that for you.
Okay.
And it does it every day. I mean, that's the advantage of the life cycle funds. And I think you've mentioned this, or one of your listeners did, a very astute observation. He said the life cycle fund allows him to buy low and sell high every day that the market does well. A little bit comes out of your of whichever fund did well to get it back into the balance that your current L fund allocation has. So you're selling that high, and you're putting it into the lower fund.
You know what that always reminds me of? AAA and others say you're on an icy mountain road, there's no railing, cliff is 20,000 feet down, and you start skidding and you turn your wheels in the direction of the skid.
That's right.
And don't hit your brakes.
As one who grew up in upstate New York, I learned that lesson the
hard way. Yeah, I have that problem with investing. Selling high is harder than it seems.
Right.
Let's see. Here's another one from Joe T. Please ask the TSP guru about the upcoming Roth Thrift Savings Plan. The site doesn't give detailed information about strategies to max a person's Roth TSP contributions for 2012. The law doesn't provide for transfers from non-Roth to Roth in the TSP. This is a huge omission on the TSP site. As a CSRS person, no match. I've stopped my TSP contributions until the Roth starts. It's time for the TSP to get its act together.
Right. This is pretty timely because, as we've announced, we are going to roll out the Roth feature in the second quarter of 2012. That's between April. It will be in April, May, or June. We haven't put out a specific date yet. However, we are moving forward on it, and participants next week will begin receiving their annual participant statement. And in that annual participant statement are two bifold, it's a package, actually. You get the statement and then some information from us. There are two bifold information sheets on the rollout of Roth and what to expect. So for all of our 4.5 million participants out there who are looking forward to getting information timely, they will be getting it starting next week. One of the challenges you face, and I'm sure your listeners understand this working in the federal government as they do, is do you start putting out information well in advance of when it can be put to use? And we've decided that it's better to put it out closer to the time when people will be able to take advantage of that information, and that time is now approaching. Also, I should say we just yesterday, I know, sent our draft regulations over to the Federal Register for publication. It's a pretty thick package. It'll probably take a while before the Register is able to publish it, but that'll be coming up over the coming days.
Okay, and he mentioned here, he said, as a CSRS person, I've stopped my TSP contributions until the Roth starts. What's that all about?
I'm not sure, unless what he's saying is he is aware, and this is correct, that there will not be in-plan conversions of existing money from traditional status, pre-tax status, to Roth status or post-tax status. Those types of in-plan conversions are very limited under the tax code. So we are, and there would only be a very small number of people who would be a small percentage who would be allowed to do it. So we are not offering that at the rollout of the Roth. What we want to do is put out the options that are out there for everybody now and get the basic program up.
Now, for a regular Roth IRA, I know there are income limitations. If you make X amount of dollars if you're single or X amount if you're married, you can't have a Roth. Does that apply?
Right. The key there is, you said, for a regular Roth IRA.
Uh-huh.
There are different rules
for
Roth IRAs and Roth 401ks. So the income limits do not apply in a Roth 401k, and the Roth TSP will look like a Roth 401k.
Okay, excellent. That's good enough. And here's one from Susan with the Treasury Department. She said, I'm one of the few to switch from the old civil service retirement system to FERS back in the 1980s. To this day, I don't know if I made the right choice. Now at 54, working that extra year to age 56 is a big deal. Back in my 20s, not so much. I've always been pretty good about putting in the TSP and now have a balance of a little over $200,000. I've been a grade 12 for 13 years. When I read your articles earlier this week about proposals to lose the Social Security supplement, that's when I freaked out. How can the government? Well, of course, you can't comment on that. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. But I wrote her back and I said, if you maxed out in the thrift savings plan, you probably did make a smart move.
Well, that's right, because you pick up the matching contributions,
yeah.
Which, you know, up to 4% of salary is a 100% immediate return on your investment. So, but you know, the question back in the 80s of the switch from CSRS to FERS was something that was not handled by the TSP. It was handled by the Office of Personnel Management. It's a retirement system issue, as is the special supplement for FERS people. That's part of the FERS annuity program. It's not part of the TSP.
Right. And this is one of those things that there's a lot of what if. And people should remember that we went through all of this. We went through 12 months of this last year, this sort of roller coaster ride about this is going to be cut, that panel is going to do it. Nothing happened. We have a new congressional group coming up that has a February 29th deadline, and this is an election year, but we still don't know what's going to happen. But back to her situation, I thought the rule of thumb at the time, and Senator Ted Stevens in his office really drafted this FERS program, which is it's probably as good as or better than anything in the private sector has because of the 401k match and the fact that annuities are partially indexed to inflation. So, but the rule of thumb back then was if you're a lifer, you probably should stay, just to be safe, stay in the civil service retirement system because it has a more generous civil service benefit. But if you're like most people who go to work for the government, most people, I think it's only 30% of the people who go to work for the government retire from it. And the majority work for a while and then move on or stop to raise a family or what have you. And for them, FERS is better because of the portability of both the civil service benefit and also the Social Security. But it sounds like in her case, with $200,000 in her 401k as a GS-12, for a long time. Sounds like she's done very well.
It does, and your recollection is exactly right. The golden handcuffs issue, they called it at the time, that the CSRS program was created before the Social Security system. It was CSRS was built in 2000 in the 1920s, so it was a complete retirement system. So if you stayed with it throughout an entire career, you didn't have any holes in your retirement benefit. It covered what Social Security would normally cover, although not all the social insurance aspects of Social Security, right. but it provided a complete benefit. However, as we got into the 70s and 80s, it became apparent that people were not, by and large, staying with one employer, and that trend has stayed with us and indeed accelerated to a certain extent.
It was a very good move done by some good people. Need to take a short break here. I'm talking with Tom Trabuco from the Thrift Savings Board, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Thursday, February 2nd at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will focus on critical issues facing government and industry leaders in securing cyberspace. The panel includes government leaders from DHS, U.S. Cyber Command, and OSD. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Thursday, February 2nd at 12 noon right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by Lockheed Martin and McAfee. Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio. Join me this week for my special guest, Brad Howe, principal with IntelliSource Financial Services. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Did you know that organ and tissue transplants save thousands of lives each year? This 2012, make the decision to save lives by becoming an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Registering is easy. Do it whenever obtaining or renewing your driver's license. Or register online at beadonor.org. That's beadonor.org.
This is Hillary Howard. I registered to be a donor and have the heart on my driver's license to prove it. Join me and register today.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Tom Trabucco. He is Director of External Affairs for the Federal Thrift Retirement Investment Board, and that means he's the spokesman for your TSP and been doing this job. Tom, you've been doing this since inception, haven't you?
That's correct. Yeah, I started here in January of 1987. So I have had the privilege of being here with the Thrift Board and doing this wonderful thing that we've done here. Actually, it was a gift from the Congress to create this program that works just for federal employees. That's it. That's our sole goal. Here is to provide retirement security to federal and postal employees, members of the uniformed services, and we act as fiduciaries and solely in their interest and for their exclusive benefit.
The program we were talking before the break was drawn up by it was bipartisan, but it was Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, who was a very good friend of federal workers, and we all knew and worked with Jamie Cowan. The Congressional Research Service played a big hand in it, and
absolutely,
and they were in effect told to design a system as good as anything in the private sector. And while I'm sure they were right down the middle, they were also designing a system for themselves. So people who were suspicious of this from the beginning really had it all wrong. Because
yeah, I believe you're right. I mean, it was change, and change is always of concern. And as you know, I was the lobbyist for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees at the time this was going through the Congress, and we worked very hard to shape it to be as good as it possibly could be. But I think that all of the people who were involved in it were trying to do the right thing.
I think the thing that saved the civil service retirement system from being abolished by Congress is the fact that it's getting smaller every day. Nobody's coming in, and people are retiring from it and dying every day, like World War II veterans. Because I think if the government was under the civil service retirement system today, Congress would have dismantled it.
You're probably right. You know, they talk about the so-called unfunded liability.
Yeah.
And if you read the fine print, all of that has to do with the civil service retirement system. It has nothing to do with the FERS benefit program, because that is funded by the agencies each year. They have to pay their fair share. That was not the case with the old CSRS retirement system.
Tom, you have some new figures, don't you, some new numbers?
I do. Yes, we just got the returns for January, and January was a very good month. Let's see, why don't we run through each of the five funds and then each of the L funds. For January, the G fund return was 0.13%. The F fund, fixed income fund, was 0.88%. The C fund was 4.5% for the month. The S fund, 7.59% for the month. And the I fund, 5.36% for the month. Those are some very healthy returns. Now, for the L funds, the L income fund was up 1.18%. The L 2020 fund up 3.03%. 2030 was up 3.77%. 2040 up 4.34%. And 2050 up 4.87%.
So in months when the stock markets, the CS and the I funds, when they're doing well, the far out life cycle funds do better because they have a more of the portfolio is in those stocks, correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah, as you get closer down in the L2020 or L income range, you have a higher concentration of G fund securities and F fund securities and fewer stocks.
The life cycle funds, I think some people, there is also a fund not associated with the government called a lifestyle, and that's for things you want out of life or your philosophy or whatnot. Life cycle is based on when you believe you're going to start withdrawing the money, which is not necessarily when you retire.
That's right. And what it does is it cycles down your exposure to risk as you get closer and closer to that date when you expect to withdraw the money. And as we know, it's not necessarily at the retirement date. Your annuity kicks in at retirement, your regular annuity from OPM, but you can delay withdrawing your funds in the TSP until you're age 70 and a half once you separate. If you continue working, you don't have to withdraw until you separate from service. So we have people in their 70s and their 80s who are still contributing to the TSP through their federal service and are not required to begin withdrawing it until they actually actually do separate from service.
Well, and you were talking earlier about buying low and selling high, and how looking at the C fund here, 4.5%, S fund 7.59%. and the I fund 5.36 for the month of January. So a lot of people's idea would be, hey, these things are going up. I'm going to rush out and buy some. I'm going to switch over. But in the life cycle funds, exact opposite happens.
Well, that's right. But let's get back to what you said today. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at these returns, and I want to get in on some of that. What you're doing in that regard is chasing returns.
Yeah.
These returns have already been realized. If you were in, you got these returns. If you were not in these funds, you did not get them, and they do not. These are not necessarily going to these will not be the returns for February in these funds.
I can guarantee that, right?
I don't know what they will be. So that's why we say the key is to get an asset allocation that works for you and stay with it.
Now, how are people doing with these life cycle funds? Are they gaining in popularity?
They are. Let's see. I just pulled out some numbers a little bit earlier, and we have the largest number of L fund investors that we have ever had, and I believe, although I can't put my finger on it right now, it was 788,000 participants have funds in these L funds out of our 4.5 million.
And the idea, I know some people have said, I'm going to get into one of these life cycle funds, maybe the one the year 2030, but I'm also going to invest in other things, maybe the C, the S, and the I. But that's kind of self-defeating, isn't it?
Well, you are working against yourself when you do that, because the L funds are designed to be one and done. It has the allocation of all five of the investment choices. There's no overlap in our investment choices. That's one of the good things about it. And what it does is every day it gets you back to the allocation that your point in time. Think of this as a timeline, and as you head out that timeline into the future, your investment becomes less risky, and that adjusts every quarter. But nevertheless, every day it is brought back into that allocation that you're in at the time. So that is supposed to be the one and done investment. Now, we understand why people may want to dip their foot in a little bit and see how it goes, but our recommendation is that you try to go use the fund the way it's designed.
You have a sizable number of military people who are investing in the TSP, even though they don't get the 5% match, which I think they should. I think Congress should do that. But you still have a goodly number, I guess, with the Navy leading the way, last I looked.
That's right, and the Navy is still way out there.
Isn't the Roth option particularly good for military people because they're young, that they tend to be young?
It is, and it's one of the reasons that caused us to look very hard at the Roth when this first came up a couple of years ago. Because remember, not only are they young with a long investment horizon, but they are also earning very little because they're at the beginning of their career. And the tax break that you get from pre-tax contributions is more valuable to higher paid people than it is to lower paid people. The simple reason is the higher paid people pay a higher marginal tax rate. So it has more value to them. Add on to that the fact that with the what they call the op tempo and the assignments, the overseas assignments that currently uniformed services members are getting over and over again, they are often in a combat zone. In combat zones, the pay that you get from the government is not taxed at all. So we separate that when it comes in, and that is non-taxable money. So many of these people have no tax liability right now whatsoever. So a pre-tax investment, it does not have the value for them that it does for somebody, say, who's further on in their career at the GS 11, 12, 13 level.
Right, but a Roth for military people would be manna from heaven, huh?
That's right, because they get to put in their money post-tax, meaning they've, again, paid no tax if it's combat zone exclusion funding, or they've paid very small tax on it if they are not in the combat zone, because they earn little. And they're generally, for the young people, 20 years old, they're 40, 45, 50 years away from drawing down those funds. So you get that compounding over that very long period of time. And then when it comes out of the Roth, neither the contributions nor the earnings that have accrued are subject to federal income tax. That's the big deal.
Yeah, when that happened, people really couldn't believe it. A lot of people couldn't grasp the concept. But the Congress has promised it will never be taxed.
That's right.
Unbelievable. Okay, we need to take a – actually, Tom, we need to bow out of this segment of the show. Thank you very much for being here, and we're going to get you back at least one more time.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
I look forward to it.
Journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The Pentagon has grounded six F-35 fighter jets at Edwards Air Force Base in Southern California due to a problem with the parachutes packed under the pilot's ejection seat. Reuters reports the affected parachutes, manufactured by a privately owned British company for Lockheed Martin, were improperly folded and must be adjusted before the aircraft can resume its test flights. I'm J.J. Green.
Airmen, we're on our way.
At EADS North America, we help our country respond to emergencies and natural disasters.
We see you. We're coming in.
From coordinating communications to medevac and emergency response, we provide the mission-critical systems our country demands. Every day, we support homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe.
Patient secure. ETA 10 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
It is one of our most sophisticated drones, and Iran claims that it was hijacked using a flaw in the GPS guidance system. They got the drone to think that it was in Afghanistan when it was actually still in Iran, and so the drone landed at its home base, thinking it was home base, right. But actually it was in Iran.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Experience GW basketball in one of D.C.'s best college venues, the Colonials Club. As a member of the Colonials Club, you will enjoy a game day atmosphere that is unmatched in Washington area college basketball. Your philanthropic donation and loyal support for GW Athletics provides countless opportunities to our student athletes in pursuit of both their academic and athletic goals. Call 202-994-7325 to join the Colonials Club today and help raise high the buff and blue.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Stopping blood flow from a wound can, of course, mean the difference between life and death. So a new sponge has been engineered to speed clotting. Even a neck wound that obviously can't take a tourniquet could be quickly sealed using the sponge, says Paula Hammond, a chemical engineer at MIT.
We can actually coat every pore of that sponge and therefore really load it with a large amount of thrombin.
The protein thrombin induces rapid blood clotting, and Hammond devised a way to spray it into the sponge in alternating thin layers with tannic acid, a natural substance found in teas that
interacts with the protein in a way that doesn't remove its activity and preserves it.
Hammond says the active ingredients remain stable in the sponge for at least a few months. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Just had a nice chat with Tom Trabucco, the Thrift Investment Board, and he said the Roth IRA information is coming in the next couple of months. So be looking for that. And if you're military type, take very definitely consider the Roth option for the reasons he mentioned. We've got on the line now Steve Losey, senior writer for the Federal Times. Steven, you with us?
I'm here. How are you?
Hey, good. Thank you. We've got so much on the plate today.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at your front page and our front pages and whatnot. I guess the number one item, at least in proximity, is the House vote. Is that going to be today on the federal pay freeze?
Yes, I called Eric Cantor's office a little bit ago, and they said that it is still on tap for today. They are going to start voting at 5 p.m. today, and they say it is number one on the docket.
And this is fast action, particularly for this Congress, isn't it?
Yeah, it surprised me. They are really fast-tracking this one. It was introduced Friday by Congressman Duffy, Sean Duffy from Wisconsin, it was introduced Friday, and Monday they said, we're voting on this on Wednesday. So, yeah, they are really moving it through real fast.
Now, the assumption is that it will pass in the House. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, the House is controlled by Republicans, many of whom in the leadership positions have been very skeptical about, critical of how federal employees are compensated. They cite studies that say that federal employees are overpaid or overcompensated. So, yeah, it's going to pass the House pretty easily, I think, but it's going to run up against a lot more resistance in the Senate.
Do you think there'll be procedural delays before there's a final vote in the Senate?
I would be surprised if it even passes the 60-vote filibuster threshold.
It's a threat that's definitely not a done deal. And as many have pointed out, President Obama, who initiated the original two-year federal pay freeze in his budget, called for a 0.5% raise for January 2013. And while that's not much, it's definitely a raise as opposed to a freeze, continuation of the freeze.
Yeah.
I see you guys had a story that said that the Pentagon was considering smaller pay raises for its people, its civilians in the future. And as we all know in government, when the Pentagon gets a cold, the rest of the government sneezes or has the sniffles. How would this work, and what would be its impact on other federal workers?
Well, it's not quite clear exactly yet how this would work. Last week, the Pentagon came out with their with their budget plan for the next couple of years, because they are their budget is getting cut. I mean, that's just going to happen. So this is how this report says how Leon Panetta wants to enact this. And one of the things that they said, there was a passing reference to cutting $60 billion from overhead and personnel costs, and they said part of that is going to come from, quote, reductions in planned civilian pay raises. Now, there's a bit of tea leaf reading going on here, but the way I see that, sounds like they're anticipating that instead of, you know, perhaps the 2% or 3% raises that they might have hoped for, we might be seeing something more along the lines of this half percentage point pay raise that Obama is proposing for 2013, maybe 1%. So, yeah, the Pentagon is anticipating very slim reduced pay raises for civilian employees through fiscal 17, and as you said, of course, that is going to ripple out to all other federal employees.
Yeah, well, that makes sense then, because I know the reaction of federal union leaders. I think some of us expected them to, you know, march on the White House when the president proposed only a 0.5 raise, but in fact, they've said one publicly and several in private that we're lucky to get this given the political situation and the economy.
Yeah, it's, you know, the last decade is going to be remembered as sort of the salad days for federal pay raises, and it's not going to get like that for a long time, because the economy is still lagging. The budget deficits are front and center on Congress's agenda, and I don't think there's any way that, you know, especially a Democratic president can justify, you know, a 3% raise or something along the lines of what President Bush passed. Or propose, that is.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting that 2000 was the good old days, and the 1990s as well. And the best year that Feds ever had on Capitol Hill was 2009, followed by almost immediately by pay freezes. And here we are in the new reality of things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at these. the timing is interesting to me. This Congressional Budget Office report, which said that the headline, anyhow, was federal workers are paid 16% more than their counterparts in the private sector. But it's actually much more nuanced than that. And it looks to me to be one of the best studies and conclusions I've seen coming in the pay situation.
That's right. I agree. I think this is a very interesting report. I think it kind of illuminates a lot of what's going on. You're absolutely right. The overall message, the overall summary was feds earn 16% more when you factor in both pay and benefits. But when you start breaking it down by education, that's when things start getting interesting. If you're a federal employee with a doctorate or a professional degree, you know, a PhD, an MD, what have you, you earn total compensation that is 18% less than you would in the private sector. And most of that comes from a wage differential. You get underpaid in wages. Your benefits are more or less the same, but your wages are way under you earn in the private sector. Now, if you just have a high school diploma, it's reversed. You get 21% higher wages than you would in the private sector, CBO estimated, but you get 72% more benefits than you would earn in the private sector. And most of that, CBO said, comes from the defined benefit pension that federal employees still have, but that is kind of going away in the private sector.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, too. To me, this starkly shows the difference between the federal government and the private sector. And the private sector is everything from CEOs on Wall Street to burger flippers in California. And, as I'm fond of saying, Uncle Sam doesn't do retail. You know, a federal government agency is not like going into a neighborhood mall with various stores. It is a highly professional, highly administrative outfit. And the example I like to use is, a clerk at NASA may make more than a clerk in a comparable industry, an R&D business, but a rocket scientist at NASA is going to make a lot less in salary than a rocket scientist with the Boeing or McDonnell Douglas or some of these other places. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think some Republicans pointed to this and said, well, this shows that federal employees are overpaid and, maybe we need to freeze pay for another couple of years, or maybe we need to, use this as evidence to get rid of the defined benefit pension. I don't think that's the case, because if you start just imposing blanket caps, blanket freezes that affect everybody, it's just going to make the problem worse. It might hold down, it might kind of shrink some of this gap between federal pay versus private pay for, say, the people who just graduated high school. But the gap between feds and private sector for people who have doctorates, that's going to get even worse. It's just going to exacerbate the problem. I think what this report shows is that the general schedule needs a much more deep overhaul. Something, there needs to be a broader reform of how federal employees' jobs are classified, how they're paid, and something that takes into account market factors, so we can pay, for example, the NASA engineers more, so they can be more competitive with the private sector.
The Carter administration and Clinton, in particular, wanted the government to adopt a total compensation concept, and that is to figure in the value of fringe benefits as well as pay when handing out raises to federal workers. And that's really what this Congressional Budget Office report has done. It's combined the value of pay and benefits in one package.
That's right. And one thing, some federal employee advocates, especially the federal unions, point to the Federal Salary Council's reports and that are based on Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers, which consistently find roughly a 26%, the feds are 26% underpaid. That does not factor in benefits, so that's one issue. But there's other people. I'm not talking about just Republicans here. I'm talking about independent, nonpartisan pay experts who say they're not quite sure that the Federal Salary Council's findings that of a widening pay gap in a time of recession, when millions of people in the private sector are unemployed, underemployed, they're not quite sure that's that passes the smell test.
Some think they need a reality check. Hold that thought, if you will. We need to take a short break here on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back.
Mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
Several of the government's most recognizable websites are moving to the cloud. The General Services Administration has signed a deal to transition sites including USA.gov and Data.gov to a privately hosted cloud platform. GSA made the award under its new blanket purchase agreement for cloud infrastructure as a service. It's the second such major deal under that BPA. Homeland Security used the vehicle to move several of its public websites to the cloud last summer.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Caps fans, there's more than one big game on Sunday. Don't miss the Sunday matinee against the Boston Bruins on Sunday, February 5th at 12:30 p.m. The Caps beat the Bruins 5-3 last week and look to do it again on Sunday. Caps games are always huge events. The fans are always pumped up. Always a great time. This is the hottest ticket in town. Tickets are very limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to WashingtonCaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
What is the strategic vision for today's U.S. Air Force? How is the Air Force managing in an era of fiscal constraint? What is the Air Force doing to improve its operations and become more efficient and agile? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Aaron Connaughton, Undersecretary of the U.S. Air Force. Next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
We look at applications and software development from an architectural view today. At least we should, because quite frankly, it's so much easier to design security in than to find the thousands or tens of thousands of vulnerabilities that might exist in that software at a later date once deployed.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help government secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple: to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the wish wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Losey, senior writer with the Federal Times. We're discussing the run-up to the pay raise vote today, or the pay freeze vote, which is that scheduled for 5, Steve? Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, and this was really fast-tracked. The idea didn't come up until Friday, and then the Congressional Budget Office report on federal workers being overpaid in many instances happened to come out on Monday, so very, very interesting timing. See, there's also another a couple of things that are possibly going to come out of Congress. We have this bipartisan House-Senate committee that's looking at ways to preserve the payroll tax cut and extend unemployment benefits. And after all, this is an election year, so those would be two popular items with many of their constituents. Some of the ways to do this are probably going to come out of the hides of federal workers, do you think?
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. It's something the Republicans have looked at in the past, and it's seen by Republicans as both a lucrative source of revenue for and also politically safe, because federal employees have been beat up so much over the last year or so that if they propose cutting federal benefits, that might upset, you know, roughly 2 million feds plus their families, but not a whole lot of people besides that.
Yeah.
Congressman Dennis Ross, he introduced his own bill last week that would reduce the amount that future federal employees get in their pension, and would increase the amount all federal employees pay a good deal. And he eventually wants to get rid of defined benefit pensions entirely and move everybody to just a TSP only retirement system.
Is your sense that this would be that current people would be grandfathered in, or would they literally change the rules on them?
As far as
the defined benefit goes.
As far as the defined benefit. Well, the contribution rates would increase for all
families. Everybody, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're a current employee, your pension would not change, the amount you receive. You know, what he's talking about is moving future people to a high five instead of the
right.
High three, having their pensions calculated at 0.7% versus the 1% or 1.1% that is the case now. The high three and the 1 to 1.1%, that would not change for current employees, but for future employees that he calls quote-unquote secure annuity employees,
Yeah. The
pensions would go down a good deal. You'd lose 30 to 40% by my estimation.
And, you know, that's not unprecedented, because you had it in the auto industry in a number of places, and I believe the Postal Service now has a two-tier wage system, so people coming in, new hires coming in to certain jobs are paid less than they would have been under the old system. So it's not unprecedented. It could happen.
Yeah.
One of the things, it's funny, we got two waves of reaction. When we reported that they were talking about eliminating the FERS supplement, and that is the amount of money, in some cases a lot of money, that the government pays employees who retire before age 62. They will pay them this annual supplement, which can be $9,000, $10,000, $12,000, until they hit age 62 and become eligible for Social Security. The first round of people were horrified at this, called it just the attempt of breach of contract, and they said they'd quit the government and leave it. But the second round came in, and these people identified themselves as FERS employees, and they said, really, this is there's no rationale for this. There's no reason for it. All it does is encourage government workers to retire earlier than people in the private sector can or do.
That's interesting. Yeah, and thank you for reminding me. I forgot to mention the FERS supplement. But, yeah, that is interesting, an interesting take on it.
Yes, it is. And you know, one guy said, I'd like to do it, but why should the government supplement me to retire earlier than my brother-in-law in the private sector?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What else have we got going on? I noticed you had something about long-term care insurance. The coverage is up? The numbers of people?
Yeah, long-term care insurance is up. They had an open season last year. It was the first that allowed federal employees to get into long-term care with an easier, abbreviated underwriting period.
Right.
It was the first time that an open season had been held since long-term care was opened to same-sex domestic partners of gay and lesbian federal employees. And I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but that increased the enrollment in long-term care a good deal.
I think your paper said 45,000 new people had signed up for it. So that's a lot, considering there were 225,000 to begin with. The other thing that I think anecdotally hear this, and I know at least one relative of mine, they did not sign up for the government program, but it made them think about long-term care, and they went out in the private sector market, they're younger, and found an individual long-term care policy that was comparable to or better than the one being offered by the government. But I think the lesson to take away from this is that while maybe only 250,000-300,000 federal workers are signed up for long-term care insurance, just the fact that this program exists, they get information on it, and they hear about it, maybe prompts them to go out and buy it on their own.
That's right. On another note, we're running out of time,
yeah.
But one thing I wanted to get in, the Senate, Senator Kaka's Subcommittee on Federal Employees, is holding a hearing later today on retirement processing for federal employees. OPM Director John Barry is going to testify. He's going to be asked about OPM's plan to fix this long-standing problem of incomplete annuities and the many-month delay it takes OPM to process the accurate pension checks for new retirees. It's something that it's not just John Barry. It's something that's plagued OPM directors for, gosh, like 20 years. So John Barry last week or the other week put out a detailed plan on how he expects to fix this, which includes a lot more, nearly a 50% increase in processing staff and many other process improvements. So he's going to get some interesting questions, I think, from senators, and we'll just have to wait and see what he says.
And this is where the TV generation clashes with reality in government, because we see on television that within 22 minutes of a drama, using computers, somebody can solve any problem. You know, if they could find Bin Laden and you name it, Jimmy Hoffa. But this is a paperwork-intensive process. If you have someone who's been in government for 40 years, he may have military service, he may have been with five or six different federal agencies, a woman may have left to raise a family and come back. Again, a paper trail all over the place, and having these poor people at OPM and up in Boyers, Pennsylvania, who sit there and they're charged by law with getting it right. That is not giving away the store, and it can be a very difficult process. We heard from a woman earlier this week that she's in trying to get disability retirement, and she's been doing this for over a year. So the advice I guess we'd all give people, if you're even thinking about retiring, given the major early outs in the Postal Service and in a dozen other agencies, is have a lot of money saved up for bills and expenses.
That's right. That's right. It's there's some nightmare. It doesn't happen for everybody, of course, but yeah, I've also heard those nightmare cases of people saying, I've been waiting for a year, or I'm getting less than half of what I'm owed, and people have to dip into their TSPs, their savings. So yeah, make sure you have at least 6 months cash on hand.
Okay, we leave you with the note, money is good, folks, and we'll see you next week. Thank you, Steve Losey from Federal Times. We'll be back here next Wednesday. Remember, the shows are archived, so you can listen at your leisure. See you next Wednesday. Have a good week.